the U.S. trade deficit widens again.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke. Welcome to the Morning Open, our look at business and the economy as Wall Street starts the day. America continues to buy a lot more from other countries than it sells to them, according to a new government report this morning. What does the expanding trade deficit cost us? That's coming up. First, where's Wall Street? Trade deficits, a gloomy Federal Reserve. Investors seem to be getting nervous. The Dow Industrials are down 202 points at 10,442. That's a drop of almost 2%. The NASDAQ is down 2.3%. S&P 500 down almost 2%. Want to hear about an exception? The big department store Macy's said its profits surged in the last 3 months, and Macy's stock is up more than 3%. The gap between what the U.S. imports and what we export grew again in June. That word from the government this morning. Here to tell us what it means, our Wednesday regular, economist Richard DeKayser of Woodley Park Research, joins us live from Washington, D.C. Hi, Richard.
Good morning.
The trade deficit jumped 19% in June. I thought a recession would make us demand less stuff from abroad.
Well, that's generally the case when the U.S. economy slows down, as it has in recent months, though calling it another recession, I think, would be going too far.
Mm-hmm.
When we slow down, generally our demand for foreign goods, i.e. imports, slows. We've seen exactly the opposite in a very big way in the past couple of months. So it is a little bit puzzling, but nonetheless, it is what it is. And one implication is that it's going to chisel down our growth rate. In the second quarter, the government's first guess was that the economy expanded at a 2.4% pace. Given this number and some others that have come out since their first guesstimate, that's likely to be somewhere in the vicinity of 1 to 1.5% now, which is a pretty substantial markdown.
Even our infamously enormous trade deficit with China is nearing record levels. Wasn't China working with us to bring that down?
Well, China did begin to let its currency rise about 7 or 8 weeks ago. It's been very slow. They've only let their currency climb about 1 percentage point. Most economists think it has to rise about 20 or 40%. So at that pace, it'll take years getting back to something that resembles fair value. And this is going to increase trade tensions in Congress, I have no doubt. It's been a simmering issue, and this is only going to bring it more to the fore.
Okay. Economist Richard DeKayser of Woodley Park Research. Good to talk to you, Richard.
My pleasure.
A government analysis of crashed Toyota cars has brought a little good news for the automaker. Investigators say they have no evidence that Toyota's electronics are the culprit for those bouts of sudden acceleration. So does that mean drivers are to blame? Here's Marketplace's Jeff Horwich.
Toyota has admitted two major problems with its late model cars: sticky gas pedals and gas pedals that get trapped under the floor mat. But a potentially more damaging theory suggests the car's internal computers may be malfunctioning and speeding people into accidents. Using special diagnostic equipment supplied by Toyota, transportation officials examined the black box data from 58 crashed cars. In their report to Congress, they say there's no evidence of any electronic problem. In fact, human error may be largely to blame. Hans Greimel is Asia editor for Automotive News.
Toyota's been saying all along that they've double-checked and triple-checked and quadruple-checked these electronics and that they're sound. The critics, however, would say that just because you have no evidence that there's a problem doesn't mean that there's not a problem.
Greimel says Toyota's not out of the woods. The government's investigation continues, and hundreds of pending lawsuits will generate their own studies of what went wrong. I'm Jeff Horwich for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Yellow Book 360, offering a spectrum of marketing tools for small businesses designed to go beyond yellow. More at yellowbook360.com.
The ban on deep water drilling in the Gulf of Mexico goes back to federal court today in New Orleans. Opponents of oil drilling often say we should embrace alternative energies like solar power. But so many Gulf Coast residents depend on drilling for their living. Can they really welcome the alternatives to oil? Marketplace's Chrissy Clark reports.
Here's one of the photos that I took. Derek Mann, he's up.
I first met Nolan Hart through his website, energyindustryphotos.com, where, surprise, he posts photos of oil derricks and pump jacks, stuff he's worked on during his 25 years in the Texas oil patch.
There is kind of a beauty to the equipment and against the sunsets.
He loves working in the oil industry. It's earned him a good living and an appreciation for where energy comes from.
A lot of people refuse to acknowledge that oil and natural gas are what gives us the lifestyle that we enjoy. even when you go to make a daiquiri and turn your blender on.
Which is why I wasn't prepared when Hart mentioned in passing where the electricity for his daiquiris comes from.
About half of it or more comes from solar panels.
What? But you worked in the oil and gas industry for 25 years. But there they were on his house, solar panels.
You can just kind of see the edge of that's a 2-kilowatt photovoltaic system on the roof.
Going solar is actually something Hart's wanted to do for a long time, after he lived for a year on a sailboat and relied on wind and solar energy. So when his hometown of Austin set up solar tax rebates 2 years ago, he went for it, and the eyebrows went up in the oil field.
I get some kidding from my coworkers sometimes. Solar panels, you know, why would you want to do something like that?
They told him turning away from oil and gas toward renewables seemed like biting the hand that feeds them. But that's not how Hart sees it.
We all need each other. For every wind turbine that's built, there's a smelter somewhere for aluminum. It's oil and gas-based energy that is building renewable energy infrastructure.
And when his coworkers poke fun at his solar panels, he reminds them.
You might not want to laugh because you'll probably have them on your roof too at some point. It all comes down to economics. And if something can be made cheaply enough and just sit up there on the roof and make free energy, why not use it?
Hart says between the worlds of black gold and green, there's a big gray area, one that the country's going to be living in more and more in the future. I'm Chrissy Clark for Marketplace.
And you can see those dazzling photos from Nolan Hart's years in the oil field at our website, marketplace.org. Tomorrow, we'll meet another unusual suspect in the push for alternative energy in the Gulf region. And finally, shoppers in Oregon report their shrimp is glowing in the dark. It is not an oily sheen from the BP spill. This shrimp is local and it's safe. The luminescence is caused by harmless marine bacteria. An Oregon State University expert says she's puzzled as to why the glow is so noticeable right now. She says it could be that more people are eating their shrimp with the lights off. It's the Marketplace Morning Report in Los Angeles. I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.